It's the Steve Fast Show on WJBC. The Dalai Lama is the sixth most admired man in the United States. But what do most Americans really know about him? Tomorrow night on National Geographic's long-standing program Explorer, journalist Michael Ware will take a look at the Dalai Lama's influence in a turbulent world, including the conflict between his home of Tibet and China, whose government annexed the region and left the Dalai Lama in exile decades ago. In a rare interview, Michael Ware sat down with the Dalai Lama during the largest Buddhist event of the year, the Kalachakra, in India. We welcome Michael Ware back to the program to tell us about it. Michael, thanks for being with us.
Thanks for having me.
So you traveled to the birthplace of Buddhism, Bodh Gaya, in India to meet with the Dalai Lama. You went there during the largest religious event of the year, the Kalachakra. What was that experience like, seeing the Kalachakra?
Well, it was a pretty extraordinary experience in every way you can think of, as you say. This is a small town, very small town in northern India, where it said that Buddhism was born. It said that that's where Buddha sat under a tree and first attained enlightenment. And what we went there for was for the Tibetan Buddhist festival known as the Kalachakra, a ceremony conducted over many days and led by His Holiness the Dalai Lama himself. 200,000 people came from all over the world, living in tents and staying in fields, just to hear what one man, the Dalai Lama, had to say. It was amazing.
You were awarded the rare opportunity to speak face-to-face with the Dalai Lama, to interview him. What were your first impressions when he entered the room? What did you think when you saw this incredibly influential person, someone who has almost an unparalleled fame throughout the world?
Well, you're exactly right. I called him one of the most recognizable people on the planet. Indeed, he's one of the great people of modern history. And when those doors first opened and he ambled or shuffled his way into the room, you could feel the temperature of the room change. I mean, you could feel the barometric pressure of the room change. And what you see is exactly what you get with the Dalai Lama. He's witty, he's jovial, he's lighthearted, he's serious, he's playful, and he has a searing intellect. So just to be in the presence of someone like that, I mean, I've been a journalist for over two and a half decades. I've met world leaders and militia commanders and warlords and all sorts of people, but to meet the Dalai Lama, that was something different, and I can't explain why.
Well, you've certainly seen humanity kind of at its worst, and I would think through your career of being a war correspondent and covering so many stories, you might have a little bit of cynicism, and I wonder, did that come into play when talking with the Dalai Lama, or did that just melt away?
Well, no, I still brought a healthy sense of perhaps not cynicism, but I'm weighed down with a considerable amount of doubt, and I have many questions about many things, and meeting His Holiness was no different. And what I wanted to know was two things: how can a man maintain his faith? How can a man have hope when no one else does, in a violent world that we see today, in a world where we're being held hostage by the likes of people as the Islamic State, and yet he still does maintain his hope. Now I question that, and I challenge that at every time I could. For example, on the issue of Tibet, I kept asking His Holiness, "Is Tibet gone?" Because in a world of real politics, in a world of power politics on the international stage, there's no interest for China to ever give back Tibet. So in many ways, a pragmatist would have to consider Tibet to be gone. But His Holiness doesn't. As he says, he's waging a great patient war. He's waging a war of ideas that will carry on over generations. And he ultimately believes that the Tibetan people will win. But it may not happen within sight, within view, or on this horizon.
We're talking with Michael Ware. His interview with the Dalai Lama airs on National Geographic Explorer this Monday. So, Michael, I guess you can take that extreme long view of winning out when you think that you're going to be reincarnated and live several lifetimes, as does the Dalai Lama. But there's kind of practical concerns with that as well. And that's the secession of the Dalai Lama. He's the 14th Dalai Lama. And who might become the 15th? this plays into the politics of Tibet being annexed by China and how they treat the Dalai Lama.
Oh, absolutely. And you strike at the core of the story that we've done. You strike at the core of my visit. I mean, I was with His Holiness for like 8 days behind the velvet rope. But one of the great things I wanted to know was that could Tibetan Buddhism and His Holiness's noble ideals survive after his death? Because once His Holiness dies, Tibetan Buddhism is arguably at its most vulnerable in its history, because it takes time for a new Dalai Lama to assume power. All right? Look at this Dalai Lama. After the 13th Dalai Lama died, the process is that high religious figures and members of the government, using dreams and symbols and omens, search far and wide for the next Dalai Lama. Now, this one was found when he was 2.5 years old. He then didn't assume power until his mid to late teens. So all up, it was about 20 years between one Dalai Lama and the next. Now, if that happens again, there's a great threat that China will intervene in the selection of the next Dalai Lama. However, two things. One is the Dalai Lama remains very practical. He has separated church and state for the first time. Several years ago, he divested all political power to an elected Tibetan government in exile. So it's effectively, it's church and state. That's in readiness for the continuity after his death. The second thing is he widely acknowledges he may be the last Dalai Lama. He even admits that he may not be the reincarnation of the 13th Dalai Lama. And it should be up to the people whether there is a Dalai Lama at all. So we are on the precipice of a great turning point in Tibetan history with every, with every year that passes.
This is where politics kind of enter into it in a strange way, because you talked about the possibility of China interfering. And in a way, they kind of already have, because the boy that was chosen to help find the Dalai Lama, not the actual next potential Dalai Lama, but someone who is supposed to help with this, was chosen. And then that child disappeared. And the Chinese government then said, well, we know who is the real person to find the path of the next Dalai Lama. So there's this really fuzzy idea of how the next Dalai Lama could or might even be chosen.
Absolutely. And therein lies the great vulnerability. I mean, and look, for me, it was my first blush or first taste or first encounter with Tibetan Buddhism, and 200,000 pilgrims from around the world, people in the greatest humility, some of them just, who own nothing more than the robes that they were wearing. And to be in their presence and to think that politically their movement and their identity may be in such peril really was quite moving. Now, His Holiness is upbeat. He says that, this is a generational contest of ideas. And he believes that, authoritarian regimes come and go. The ideals of Tibetan Buddhism have sustained for hundreds of years, and he's counting on that. Now, I don't know, again, back to whether I'm a skeptic or not, therein lies my rub. I live in a real world of ugly international politics, and honestly, I remain fearful. But I've got to tell you, his buoyancy and his optimism is infectious. My pessimism might eventually beat me down, but he definitely is infectious.
Well, he did make an interesting point. He said that the people that are of the elite and the power generations within China tend to send their children abroad for education, and that the global world of information isn't something that is strictly walled off. And in the long view, perhaps that presents a different view maybe of Buddhism, a different way of how the Dalai Lama and Buddhists are considered worldwide. And the Chinese government, there are a lot of Buddhists in China that they have to answer to.
Well, he's certainly counting on that. His Holiness actually cited that, the point we're making. Two things. He's waiting for generational change within the Chinese Politburo, their ruling body. He's hoping that this next generation that must inevitably come in is, as you say, perhaps more invested somehow in a global structure, in a global world. Now, even there, I'm not so sure. But the other thing that he's banking on, that he's relying upon, is the ultimate goodness within, hundreds of millions of Chinese Buddhists. And he hopes that eventually the momentum of their support and the momentum of their yearning and their desires for an end to any kind of oppression will win out. Now, again, I think the Chinese have been very good for a very long time at structuring their order to be able to cope with these things. I mean, I just find it very hard to see any way, any kind of a future where there really is a free Tibet. So the government is actually looking for is no longer a free Tibet. I mean, that wonderful goal, that noble, you know, that precious ideal has been surrendered. What they're looking for now is to remain a part of China, but to be an autonomous state, to be a federalist state. But even that, I fear, is more than Beijing can allow. I think Beijing would be fearful that if you give the Tibetans an inch, then maybe other minorities within China will want to take a mile. Now, that's a very short and narrow view, I would argue, from Beijing. But nonetheless, that is their mindset. And shifting that, I just don't see how it happens. Because let's not forget, Tibetans are alone. Globally, on the international stage, there's no nation state, there's no national actor in whose interest it is to take on the Chinese in favor of the poor old Tibetans. No one's going to be prepared nationally, you know, as a nation to stick their neck out to take on China over Tibet. So they remain welcomed by the world, but essentially friendless.
You talk about a changing of the guard and the fact that this could be essentially the last Dalai Lama. And even though, as you say, the political and religious sides have been separated, I mean, recently you traveled to Russia. We're seeing this rise now, what seems to be a trend of nationalism all over the world. And you see a state in exile in a place where the trend seems to be towards consolidating towards strong nationalistic tendencies in just about every hemisphere.
So they're swimming against a very powerful tide.
Yeah, exactly. It's an amazing story and something that I think we don't know enough about here in the United States. And Michael, I want to thank you so much for taking the time to talk to us a little bit about your chat with the Dalai Lama and about the state of Tibet.
Mate, thank you very much. As you say, I had no idea myself until I went there and met the man. It's an extraordinary thing. Thank you, mate.
Thank you. Michael Ware on National Geographic Explorer this week. This is Steve Fast Show on WJBC.